Good evening, boils and ghouls.
Oh, God.
And welcome to yet another episode of The Last Knock. I am one of your co-hosts. My name is Johnny Numb. And joining me tonight, as always, is...
Billy Crash.
Absolutely.
Yep.
And tonight's subject du jour is the 25th anniversary of... Tales from the Crypt presents Demon Knight. And the last time I talked with Billy, he was like, let's do something fun. So I was like, okay, let's do this, because I think we both like this movie a lot.
Yep.
And hey, 25 years is as good an excuse as any to discuss it. And the appeal of Tales from the Crypt, like as a show, and as and the EC comics that spawned the show as well. So we will get on into all that good stuff, and hopefully offer you a podcast that's as fun as watching this movie is. But before we get started, Bill, can you talk a little bit about a good friend of the show who recently passed away?
Yes, we're recording this on July 16th, and over the weekend, the wonderful, the gregarious, the funny, just a wonderful gentleman, Ron Shaw, star of The Ron Shaw Show, also an author. You can still get his wonderful books. He passed away in his sleep over the weekend. All of our love to his wife and daughter, Amber. You know, he died peacefully, which is wonderful. But he did have the best podcast. I listened to religiously. I was honored to be on it. Johnny was on it. I think I was on it twice. You were on it a couple times. It was. It didn't matter what guest he had, because you knew it was going to be awesome. He just had a special kind of delivery. He was almost like a little kid. He was so enraptured in what he was doing, the fun that he was having, his wordsmithing, and the way his brain worked was incredible. And I know the great Greg Palko of Palko Designs feels the same way. He's as shocked and devastated as all of us, and as well as Kim McDonald and Susan on a Ledge, Teresa Snyder, among others, Tracy.
So many people were outreaching to you on Facebook.
Yeah.
You know, when you shared the news, and it was really quite humbling to see, you know, so many people kind of come in to offer their condolences and their love. Yeah,
definitely loved the man. Spoke to him a while back, right before the outbreak, and you know, things were good, but you know, it's just sad. It's a unexpected loss, a sad loss. And we're just grateful that we got a chance to know him.
Mm-hmm.
And he was always, a retired peace officer, served in Atlanta area, grew up there, you know. He wrote about that as well. He has so many books out. You know, Palko did the covers, you know, a lot of the covers. Award-winning covers. So you get a chance, you know, go to Amazon.com, look up Ron Shaw. Look up his books, we're gonna miss him. And so I hope he enjoys this show, because it should be fun. We're gonna make it fun as best we can. Johnny and I don't have the ability that Ron did to he just had this special style, this special delivery, and I'm not even gonna try and mimic that. That's an insult. But he had it. He had that something special, and that's what we're gonna miss.
Yeah, and I think something, Bill, that's really well said. I think something about, because I was on his show once with you.
Yep.
And then I was on his show again, and it was just me and him. And something he was really good at doing was he kind of knew, he had a really good feel for whoever he was interviewing. Like, he kind of knew the strengths and the specialties and the character of the people he interviewed.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And he was able to really tap into that really well, because I think his style was very off the cuff, actually, but it didn't seem like that. You know, it wasn't like it wasn't like dead air where it's like, I'm going to say this next. It was totally like he was always going from one thing to the next without missing a beat. So that's what made it really fun to talk with him, because he really kept you on your feet throughout. So it's like you talk with him for an hour, but it feels like you've been talking for 5 minutes, because he's kind of run you ragged in a good way.
Oh, yeah, yeah, absolutely.
You know, with all his mental and sort of verbal gymnastics he would pull out, you know, very effortlessly and seamlessly. And I really liked that about him.
Yeah. I wish he did get to I know he didn't get a chance to interview Susan Layton, Susan on the Ledge on Twitter, and Horror Pixie, Kim McDonald, but, you know, they would have been great on there too, but,
yeah.
It was just, I don't know, he just made people feel special, and every show was like, oh, we got a show for you, and he did, man, he was like the... I could see him with the top hat and a cane going, hey, here you go, you know, and it was just, and every show was great, because he just helped people feel comfortable and wonderful, and it was just fantastic. So, love the man, miss the man.
Yeah, he's a very, very down-to-earth guy, but he had that great sense of showmanship, too, so.
Yep, absolutely.
All right, yeah, well, we'll miss you, Ron, and we hope... I hope there is popcorn and drive-in movies wherever you are right now, seriously, because he loved going to the movies. Yeah.
Oh, I think he loved the popcorn more, man. I think if I could get a sign from Ron, Bill, it's an endless bowl of popcorn up here. It just doesn't run out, and I'm not getting fat. He'd just love it. He would just like, I could see him right now on a cloud pounding popcorn going, this is great. You know, it's like... And I hope it's that way. Better be that fucking way, man.
Oh man, that's a vision of the afterlife I can totally get behind.
Oh,
yeah.
Damn. Oh, I'm shit. That'd be. Oh man, we'd all be watching movies together.
Instead of getting a Halo, we just like get like some like 1950s car, and we pull in to our spot at the drive-in, and we just watch.
Nice, man. make your own heaven. That's what I want.
Absolutely. Man. Well. In any case, Bill, let's talk about Tales from the Crypt.
Yes.
And I'm curious.
Yes.
What was your exposure to your first exposure to Tales from the Crypt? Because I know the EC Comics existed long before the TV show.
Yeah, but not this story. This story wasn't extracted from William Gaines's repertoire.
The Demon Knight, you mean?
Correct.
Yeah, I actually watched some. I watched some bonus features on the new Blu-ray last night, so I have a little bit of insider information. But were you a reader of the comics, Bill? I know you were a viewer of the HBO series.
Oh yeah, I love the HBO series. I read some of the comics, not the originals. My father had them.
Mm-hmm.
He went to the Navy, you know, called up for the Korean War, and he said, I came back. Back then, we didn't really use plastic. They were in the basement. He said, I went down, and I had the best EC Comics cover collection you ever saw. All the paper rotted.
Oh, jeez.
So the only thing I have from EC Comics when I sold my collection, comic book collection, the only thing I saved was an EC Comics A Weird Science... it's a little beat up. It's still worth like $100 or something like that. But it's a little beaten up. But I saved that in honor of my father.
Oh, that's cool.
Because he loved those comic books. He used to tell me the stories, and then that's why how I got into them. And now I'm a horror geek. So it's all my dad's fault. It's always dad's fault.
I kind of like how he passed it down to the next generation. That was mm-hmm. pretty cool.
Yeah, yeah.
And you were one of the people. Who your household was fortunate enough to have HBO in the 80s and 90s, I believe.
Oh, yeah, man. It had to. And we got it for free because they installed it, sent us two bills. Then they stopped sending us bills. My mom wrote them twice. She said, screw them. And we had it free for 15 years until they came one day and cut the cord. And it was like, you guys are idiots. We, you know, it wasn't illegal. You guys hooked it up and didn't charge us, so...
Well, it's not like your mom didn't try to do the right thing.
She did try to do the right thing, and it was so we had free HBO and cable for really 15 years.
So did you start watching Tales from the Crypt from when it started? Was it something you were interested in? Okay.
Yeah, I watched it with my dad, my brother. We all watched it. It was a religious experience, you know. It was cool. It was R-rated. There was some nudity and some sexiness going on. The stories were cool. They were bloody, funny, you know. And, you know, obviously, you know, some were amazing, some not so much, but, you know, for the most part, that was an excellent series that I enjoyed, and that got me into The Hitcher and all the other, you know.
Oh, the Hitchhiker.
Yeah, The Hitchhiker. My God,
Hitchhiker.
yeah, I'm on the road walking, and it's quite tumultuous, and it's like they would, he would talk like that, like, and he,
tumultuous.
Yeah, he would talk in like a third grade level, and then he'd give him this dollar word, and people would be like, what did he say? What the fuck? I gotta get my dictionary. You know, it's like,
what's a tumult? Come on.
Yeah.
it's not a tumult.
I got a tumult right here. Boom. And, but yeah, Tales from the Crypt was the best. And I know this movie came out like between seasons. And it was great because William Sadler was in the original pilot as an executioner, right?
Yeah, exactly. That was the one, the Death Row story.
Yeah.
And it's kind of interesting because then William Sadler, a year before Demon Knight, he was also in The Shawshank Redemption, too. So,
yep.
It was kind of interesting that he was I felt like he was a really in-demand character actor, like in the early and to mid-90s. He showed up in a lot of stuff.
Yeah, and, it was cool that he starred in a few things, too. And, of course, that's, we might say B-movie horror stuff, but, you know, so he's horror royalty and well-loved. And to be in a movie going head-to-head with the fucking Billy Zane, this is like, anytime I hear, like, oh, man, this movie isn't any good, but Billy Zane's in it. I'm like, I'm getting it, you know. Oh, he was great in this. You know, he had that smarmy look on his face the whole time. I'm the collector. You know, it's like,
yeah, he plays that up really well.
He was perfect. You couldn't get any better casting than that. And you know, the movie had a lot of people. I mean, the Jada Pinkett Smith, CCH Pounder, Dick Miller, mm-hmm. Thomas Hayden Church, like friggin' heavy hitters. You even had. Those were like the biggest of the bunch in there. I just loved it. I thought it was it was a fun ride. It was a cool story. It was a mystery, action, horror, comedy. And it was all of it. It was everything except you could even say it was a Western a little bit if you wanted. So it had it all. It had romance. Like what? it was fucking loaded.
Yeah, when Thomas Hayden Church gets the clamps on his nipples, that's really romantic. Yeah,
it was for me, man. It was for me.
Well, Bill, actually let me back up a second. Did you get to see Demon Knight in theaters, or was that like a VHS thing after the fact?
No, it was a DVD thing way after the fact.
Okay, so you didn't see it till later.
Yeah, way later. And I don't know why. I don't know why I let that happen. I can't even explain it, but it did, and I'm glad, because I reached a point where I'm like, I'm going to have a double feature. I'm going to watch this and Bordello of Blood, you know, back to back. You know, like, why not? That's a perfect matchup. So so I did that. And, man, we didn't even mention John Kassir. You know, he's...
The voice of the Crypt Keeper.
Yeah, he is it. So.
Oh, and Charles Fleischer, who's probably... He's known for a few disparate roles. He was the voice of Roger Rabbit. He was the sleep doctor in A Nightmare on Elm Street. And he was also the strange guy who shows Robert Graysmith the basement full of old movies in Zodiac.
Yeah. Oh my God. Now wait, one big name we left out: John Larroquette. Okay. Was he in the opening sequence as a slasher?
You know what, Bill? I rewatched it last night, and I was like, Oh my God, yeah, that is him.
Yep, okay.
I totally forgot about that.
Yeah, same here, yeah. And he was uncredited in the film, and he's like, oh, I'll do it anyway.
It reminded me a little of the sort, in terms of openings, it reminded me a little of the callback to him doing the narration for original Texas Chainsaw.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Years ago.
Oh, man.
But yeah, that was funny to see him, and, you know,
well, to
getting...
me...
Oh, I'm sorry, getting taken down by the Crypt Keeper for a bad take. Yeah.
Yeah, and the woman who runs this bed and breakfast is CCH Pounder, and she is, you know, she's mostly associated, she can do comedy and all, she's mostly associated with drama. She's she has a great voice, great presence, she always has, and she's like this motherly figure and all. And I think that's why they're like, oh, we got to get her for this. And it all worked because that what was it, a blown out church that was turned into a bed and breakfast, has such a cast of characters. It's got a postal worker who's ready to go postal, so he's like armed to the teeth. And
that was a very 90s joke, but it still resonates. Yeah.
Yeah, that'll never go away. And I just thought it was such a blast. And and I didn't say this before, but Charles Fleischer, if you ever get a chance to look up old clips of his stand-up, do it.
Yeah.
Always one of my favorites. Always loved him. Mo Leeds, that's all I'm going to say. That's for Charles. He knows what I'm talking about, and he knows that I'm a diehard fan because of that. So,
but I think I know the bit you're talking about.
Oh,
though.
Man, he was a great guy. He was so intense, cool. Always had this look about him. So it was like just a killer cast. And
yeah, definitely a really, and you were talking about Jada Pinkett Smith and Thomas Hayden Church. This was actually before they got their, you know, I feel like this was kind of before they got their big breaks. You know, this was kind of the movie that kind of catapulted them into like the things that they would get known for, like Thomas Hayden Church and Wings and Jada Pinkett Smith in her film career, and then getting married to Will Smith, obviously.
Yeah. Now, did director Ernest Dickerson actually convince the producers to go with Jada Pinkett Smith instead of Cameron Diaz? Because I believe she was supposed to get that part originally.
Oh, and that's interesting. You know, if that was something, Bill, that did not come up in the featurette I watched. They did have a problem with the fact that she came onto set with short hair that was dyed blonde. Because apparently when they auditioned her, she had long hair, and I guess they liked the long hair. But she came on set the first day, and she said, "No, I'm not going to change my hair." And Ernest Dickerson was like, "Okay."
Oh, man.
It's like they had to call Joel Silver and tell him that, and I guess it all worked out in the end, obviously, because that's how she looked through the whole movie.
It's funny that you mention that, because whenever you cast people, or like when I do, the first thing I do is I tell them, don't touch your fucking hair, you know, or can you grow it more, or, you know, I don't usually get to tell them to cut it, but no, one guy we did who played one of the troopers, and the one thing I did, it's like, yeah, that's a little too long, man. If you're going to play a state trooper, that's got to be cut short. If you don't mind.
Okay.
And I said, if you mind, then you're out. You know, it's like, you know, so he's like, no, I'll do it, man. So that worked. But I'm surprised they didn't tell her, like, keep the hair, or like,
Yeah, I'm not sure. It's kind of fascinating how dramatic the recollection of all of that was. But I mean, to the what you just brought up, that does, you know, that can make a difference in character and in story. So I mean, I get why it's so important to kind of stick with that, to stick with what you were, you know, consigned to do. So
yeah.
So, but yeah, I think it's an interesting. Definitely an interesting movie, because you see all this talent before they kind of hit the big time, and then you got Dick Miller, and you think, oh, he's just going to be a bit player, but he actually has a nice meaty role in this movie too, which is
awesome.
Yeah, and you know, he was talking about how he really, you know, I think he said it was one of the meatiest roles he actually ever had in a movie. So I'm like, good for him, and he's fantastic as kind of the creepy old pervy drunk guy too.
Yeah, he was always amazing in everything he was in. We lost him last year, January of last year, 2019. But you saw him in Gremlins, Terminator, The Burbs, a whole bunch of stuff. He was in almost 200 projects. He was just great, man.
Yeah, all those Roger Corman films from
all
the,
of them.
The 60s. Yeah, he was in all of them. Yeah, forget about it.
Yeah,
so it's like you always... There's like certain people who show up and you get a good feeling about kind of a movie, I think. And he's one of them, you know. Dick Miller always just automatically elevates any project, even if it's only for the couple minutes he's in the movie, you know.
Yeah, damn straight. Absolutely.
But I think also the way the movie opens is pretty... I mean, we were talking about kind of the I'd forgotten about the fake out opening, which starts just like the TV show.
Mm-hmm.
And the production is, you know, they go a bit more through the mansion that the Crypt Keeper inhabits. And then it ends like on this weird punchline where you're in this slasher movie. It feels like an episode of the HBO show, you know, because like within a couple minutes you have a topless woman in a tub. You have a guy who's been dissolved in the basement bathtub with quicklime, but he comes up, you know, a bloody mess. Mm-hmm. And it's just fantastic because it's a total fake out. You know, it's like, oh, then we discover that the Crypt Keeper is directing this, you know, oh, I've gone Hollywood. And, you know, it's like, oh, this is a fake movie within the actual movie. And I kind of love that about it, how they play up the beats of the TV show in just a couple minutes, and then they settle into the main Demon Knight story, which I thought was pretty cool.
Oh yeah, absolutely. It's a fun romp. You got your blood, you got your gore, you got your laughs, you got all of it. I mean, it was filmed they found this abandoned airport, and they created the set within an abandoned hangar. Mm-hmm. And it was great because they could shoot during the day, because they just knock out the lights, and it was like, so that was cool. I'm sure the actors appreciated that, because you always hear, oh, we had a 16-hour day. Maybe they still did, you know. I don't know I don't know what the schedule was, but that would be great that they didn't have to, like, okay, it's another night shoot. Oh fuck, man, you know. So
yeah, and actually there was a funny story on the featurette. I promise I'm going to actually provide some of my own insights during this episode.
I just
thought it was funny when Ernest Dickerson was talking about how they got the abandoned hangar to shoot in so they wouldn't have to shoot nights, and how there were apparently pigeons like nesting up on high that they couldn't get rid of.
That's what I heard, yeah.
So I guess every day before they would start, I guess, shooting, someone would fire a gun and it would shut the pigeons up.
Yeah.
But it was like William Sadler said something about how, yeah, it lasted about 5 minutes till they started cooing again. So I was like,
oh man, I'm sure they had that gun going off all the time.
Well, and then I would think of what if you're getting a shit on from above from the pigeons.
Damn, man.
They didn't go into that, but I thought that was kind of funny, an interesting little production detail there. But
yeah, now how successful was this? Because it looked cool, it looked great. I remember people talking about it more so than people were really talking about Bordello of Blood, because right after this there was supposed to be Dead Easy, which was like the Fat Tuesday zombie story in New Orleans, but that was abandoned. And then after that was supposed to be Body Count, and that also was unproduced. And then they did Bordello of Blood, you know, years later in 96, and then Ritual in 2002. Did I even see Ritual?
So these were films under the Tales from the Crypt banner?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. All right. Oh, okay. I see what you're talking about now. Huh.
Yeah, so I'm like, well, how come they didn't do those movies, man?
You know, I just remember that I haven't seen Bordello of Blood. I just heard it wasn't very good, and I seem to remember it having a short box office life.
Yeah, let me see, because I was Dennis Miller, and at that point a lot of people wanted to think kill him. Yeah.
Well, this I think this was before he kind of went off into political wackadoodle territory, but Even his routine back in that time was kind of obnoxious.
Bordello of Blood should have done better. I only gave it 2.5 stars. I mean, Dennis Miller, Erica Leniak, the beautiful Angie Everhart, who I met, Chris Sarandon, Corey Feldman, William Sadler again. So it should have done really well. Who wrote the fucking thing? Gilbert Adler directed, writers William. Well, it's taken from a William Gaines story, which apparently they butchered. Bob Gale and Robert Zemeckis were the writers on that.
Well, since you asked, Bill, it looks like per the IMDb, Demon Knight only made $21 million off a $13 million budget.
Oh, that means it was a failure.
Yeah, and I'm actually kind of surprised because I don't really remember. I remember it coming out. I remember the advertising push for it, and it seemed like one of those cool things. Kind of like, it was like, oh, I want to see this, but I was like 14 at the time, and I knew my dad and my mom wouldn't go for it, so I was just kind of left with the mystique of it through the advertising. But yeah, so maybe, I don't know, maybe they were a bit hesitant to even do a follow-up because the box office wasn't quite what they'd hoped for. I don't know. It says Bordello of Blood made $5 million on a $13 budget. $13 million budget. Yeah.
Yeah, that's something you don't want.
Yeah, and you know what? I did hear something that apparently, while I was watching this last night, I was thinking to myself, man, this movie has a lot of similarity, not a lot, but, you know, setting-wise and some of the creature effects. I'm like, this reminds me a lot of From Dusk Till Dawn, which came out a year later.
Yeah.
And apparently, according to the writers who wrote the spec script that was sort of bent into a Tales from the Crypt story for Demon Knight, apparently they said From Dusk Till Dawn was, they wanted that to be another like Tales from the Crypt movie, but Tarantino apparently wanted too much for it or something, so it wound up not coming to pass. So what you have is like two movies released in, you know, consecutive years that kind of have this weird similarity to one another.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of From Dusk Till Dawn, so whatever.
I think Demon Knight's just a lot more fun.
Yeah, there's tonal shifts and just, I don't know.
From Dusk Till Dawn thing. You know, I think the thing with that one is I liked it when I was 15 and it was just like crazy wall-to-wall gore, but I think that's a movie that gets bogged down in kind of Tarantino's, you know, dialogue and character moments, and it doesn't come off quite as, it's like, okay, the scene's getting dragged out a bit because he has to, you know, flex his linguistic flourish here for us to see, you know, before we get to the action.
I love George Clooney's character. I thought it was great. I was like, build this guy up, and you know, Harvey Keitel in a role you didn't expect. Salma Hayek's dance is one of the hottest, sexiest fucking things ever caught on film.
Oh, absolutely. And, yeah.
But like, as soon as he like, got shot through the hand and there's this big hole and they put a bandage on it, I'm like, get the f-, I'm like, fuck off.
Well, that's a very...
And then Sex Machine, Tom Savini, it's like, okay. All right, here we go.
Yeah, you know, it's a lot of movies have come since then that have done a much better job. And I would say if you want a better Fred Williamson movie that's also a siege film, check out VFW. I'll never stop recommending that movie.
That was great, man.
Yeah.
That was a great fucking movie.
One of the best movies I've seen in this year. So
same here.
But yeah, getting back to Demon Knight, you know what, Bill? It's just, it lives up to what, you know, a good Tales from the Crypt episode would deliver, kind of. And I think you've kind of said that. It's got a sense of humor. It's got some actors you recognize, and they're all kind of in on it. You know, there's, you know, everybody's kind of playing it up just to the right level. There is some absurd humor going through it. Like, I forgot about the scene where the demon rips off CCH Pounder's arm.
Yeah, and I was like, yeah. Oh.
I was like, holy shit, is she going to die? And it's hysterical because she loses her arm. They give it a tourniquet, and she starts downing a bottle of vodka, and she's like fine for the rest of the movie. And I absolutely love that. She's like, no, I'm not gonna let the loss of an arm, you know,
yeah,
deter me from helping you fight this evil that's trying to get into my place. And I just love that about her character. Yeah.
Oh man. Well, I think that lives up to the what was the slogan that they had at the beginning with the town sign or something like that.
Ah, oh, shit, I think I missed it. Oh,
shit. What the hell was it? Good neighbors are our best natural resource. So she wanted she wanted to make sure that they remained. So CCH, here's to you. Love it.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting how they just you know, certain characters don't have the fate that you expect them to. The Wally character, the Charles Fleischer character, you know, you think he's kind of like the schlubby, he's like Shelley from Friday the 13th Part 3 a little bit, and that he's kind of just the overweight sad sack character. But you know, he's not just meat for the grinder per se.
Right, exactly.
You know, go ahead.
No, that was one of the great things about it, you know, the unexpected elements. The characters were, you know, quirky and cool and had, more depth than a lot of other stories do. And that only added to their, like, well, what's going to happen kind of element, which was great. So, no, they created a great character-based atmosphere. And, yeah, like, there were a lot of surprises in this, which was great. And that's part of the reason that made it work. You got jumps just from the, oh, I didn't see that coming thing, without it being some cheesy jump scare shit. You know, it was great.
Yeah, and you know, something I liked, Bill, was certain things with the cinematography that were like direct pulls from the TV show. Like,
yeah.
I'm thinking of the scene where Billy Zane gets knocked out the window. They find out what he is, like when the cop, you know, when they get him inside the hotel, and William Sadler's looking like the bad guy because he's like resisting arrest and he's trying to tell everybody, no, this Billy Zane is the bad guy. And eventually there's some sort of uprising that involves a hilarious death of a cop, actually.
Yeah, I know. Oh, yeah.
It's right out of a Peter Jackson movie.
Yeah.
You know, and but then Billy Zane somehow winds up outside. They knock him out a window or something. And it's so hysterical how he cuts himself. He has this neon green blood that he starts spilling all over the place, and these little baby demons start rising up out of the
glow stick juice.
Yeah, and it totally is that. Oh my god, yeah, it's like rave demons. While all of this is happening, everybody's just standing at this broken window, just staring at the stuff happen, like you would see in a lot of these movies with practical effects from the 80s and 90s. It's like, you know, they'd better stand there and watch it, because a lot of effort went into these effects, so we're going to film them as much as possible. But the camera would like do these periodic like push-ins, but the camera will like it'll like tilt at a weird angle while it's pushing in on the character reactions,
right,
to sort of induce this kind of, oh geez, things are tilting, things are kind of getting twisted here. This is where we're going. We're getting thrown off, our equilibrium's getting thrown off because of the situation taking a turn. And I really like that, because it was like, yeah, it's like I'm watching a really good episode with good production values of the TV show.
Yeah, and that's because Rick Botta, who did the cinematography, was cinematography on the series for five years. So, yeah, no, it was great that they picked him, and that wasn't like, yo, let's get new people in here, you know, none of that crap.
No. not like it would be today. Yeah.
Oh, television and movies are different. And it's like, what are you talking about? So yeah, I'm glad he got that. That was cool. Yeah, it had that look and feel, and so you knew you're just—it's a popcorn movie. It's a Ron Shaw popcorn movie.
Absolutely, and you know, I liked how there was a little bit of in-jokiness, like outside of the fake-out opening of the movie. I like how there's a kid who shows up at one point and gets involved in what's he reading at one point? He's reading Tales from the Crypt, the comic book. So it's like just
shocking.
But it's kind of like just maybe what that's trying to say is like it's that the movie's trying to recapture that sort of danger, that sort of forbidden pleasure kind of when mm-hmm. you're young and you're reading something that's maybe a bit darker and maybe you're not supposed to be reading it at a certain age, but here you are, and it's like you're getting sort of, you're throwing yourself into this world and your imagination's kind of running wild based off what's on the page. And I kind of like that was a little, it felt like a little nostalgic nod to like the people who, you know, who read the comics and mm-hmm. and then the people who watched the TV show. So yeah, definitely. What did you think of the special effects bill in the film?
Well, you know, mostly practical, so that's,
yeah,
I'm like, that's great, man. I'm happy with that. I loved them, like we were talking about, so much crazy stuff was going on. I know they built a fat suit for CCH Pounder to do the one arm thing.
Yeah, and that actually worked really well.
I think. It really did.
Yeah.
It's like, holy crap, they really took her arm off. Wow, she's dedicated. You know, it's just like...
That was a condition of her signing onto the movie was, yeah, you're gonna lose that arm, CCH. I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm. Oh man, no, I loved it. It was great. You know, so many people are big practical effects fans, and so if you enjoy those, watch that.
Yeah, definitely. And I liked the, I liked how when the people inside the hotel start to get a. They start to transform. They each kind of take on a. Like each one has kind of a look that matches the person. I think it's not just they don't turn into some generic, kind of samey looking thing. There's certain nuances to the prosthetics which are elaborate and
mm-hmm.
grotesque. There's kind of this weird slack jawed motif going on when people transform. I'm not sure what's up with that outside of the fact that it looks pretty cool. But it's just like, I don't know, demons be hungry, so those jaws have to be pretty flexible when they want to take a bite out of people, I suppose.
Exactly.
So.
And I feel bad for not mentioning before, but if you loved, oh man, if you loved a lot of, my gosh, television from the 80s and all, John Shuck is in here too. And it was cool to see him doing something like this.
Oh, he's the one cop, right?
He's the sheriff. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's like, holy shit, that job. Oh, his part's over. But anyway, it's like,
Well, what was he known for, Bill?
Oh my God, he was a character actor in like, you know how like you watch some 70s shows and you see, oh man, this guy was in like everything. Well, this guy was like in everything in the 80s, you know, and that's not a bad thing at all, because I remember going, holy shit, this is John Shuck. You know? I guess most noted for, he was in even Star Trek VI. He was in the original MASH movie, Dick Tracy movie, but he was in a lot of Law and Order, Special Victims. Well, I mean, that was in the 2000s, but before that. God, he was in. God, he was on everything from Rugrats to freaking Simon and Simon TV series in the 80s. He was on there for like ever. Murder, She Wrote.
I watched
Different
Simon
Strokes. Oh yeah, cool. St. Elsewhere he was in, which was great. The New Odd Couple. He played Murray the cop.
Holy cow! Okay.
Yeah. Right. So he goes. Man, prolific. And he was in a lot of 70s stuff too, but 80s was his prime. And, NYPD Blue, Freakazoid, Alf, I mean, Babylon 5, he did like, it's like every time you turn to TV, it's like, shit, there's John Shuck again, man. Holy crap, this is great. You know, working actor, you want to get work, he got work because he was good, so that was awesome.
You know, it's something else that's interesting, Bill. We didn't mention his deputy in the movie, played by Gary Farmer,
right?
Who's fantastic, and he's sort of like, he really is kind of the dopey deputy character. But
yep.
you know, even he is given kind of a bit more dimension than just that.
Mm-hmm.
Because I kind of like where he ends up in the movie, because it's kind of in a. He kind of ends up in a noble place, I think.
A noble place. I like that. I like that a lot.
Yeah, because you think, oh, he's just a dummy. You're just going to laugh at him. And it's sort of, again, like comparing it to a movie that came out a year later, like David Arquette in Scream kind of was playing, you know, the dopey Deputy Dewey kind of, you know. Mm. And he was great as that character. It's just kind of interesting, these strange parallels that were occurring in mm-hmm. these mid-90s movies. But I just thought everybody kind of had their place in this, and it just worked really well.
Agreed. I mean, there was no miscasting, anything like that. It was just you just bought into the dynamic of the movie right away.
Yeah, and I think it helped actually. You know, I mean, even if you were a person like me who wouldn't have watched Tales from the Crypt, if I'd just seen this in the theater, I think I would have clicked with it right away.
Exactly. I'm upset that I didn't go to theater. There must have been a damn reason why I didn't go. I can't.
Yeah, because I'm thinking I was like, okay, Bill watched the show, so he definitely saw this in the theater.
No, I did. I don't know why. I was at grad. No, I was done with grad school. I was trying to find a job. There you go. Fucking trying to find a damn job, Johnny.
Bill, you're trying to get in with the establishment, man. Okay. Oof.
Yeah, that's when I got that job as a child care specialist at the youth home.
Oh, wow.
Oh, yeah, you're on the unit. All these kids are convicted rapists. It's like, oh, great. Thanks. What did I do in a previous life to get this?
I was going to say to... Demon Knight seemed quaint compared to that. All right.
Demon Knight ain't shit.
But you know, Bill, we've talked a little bit about Billy Zane as a character and as a performer. Like, what did you think of him and the various incarnations his character was taken? Because his whole thing is, once he gets out of the, once he's forcibly removed from the hotel. William. That's Billy Zane going by right now, actually.
Oh, you heard the car? Oh, shit. Fuck, man.
That's okay, Bill. No, but the thing is, William Sadler has some... he has a vial of something that he's right. able to use to create force fields in
mm-hmm.
windows and doors, so that's what's keeping Billy Zane out. But Billy Zane's able to sort of exert... mind control tactics on people from afar.
Yep.
And sort of try and manifest their deepest fantasies to try and, you know, here, you know, do, hey, you want this, right? So do this. If you do this for me, I'll give you this in return. So that's how the kind of demonic presence infiltrates the hotel, even after it's kind of quote unquote locked down. But I love how, you know, what are your thoughts on how he manifests things to the different people? Because it seems like he kind of jumps around into these different personas depending on,
oh yeah,
where the person's fantasies lie, I guess.
Yeah, definitely. You know, because he's got the cowboy look, he's got the bald head thing going on, he's got the cult leader look going, he's got the rock star thing happening. He's even got that, working the bar at one point. He's got the shades on and a hat and a towel over his shoulder. Hey, how you doing? And it's like, oh my God. It's like, and he always has that, and he, you know, when people talk to him, he has that look on his face like, you don't get it. I'm going to, like, eat your soul, you piece of shit. You know, it's just like, like, I wouldn't want to go up against him because his confidence level was just so amped. And no, it was just great the way he approached everybody and tried to sway them into coming around to his way of thinking, you know, for a little, some pieces of gold. Yeah, yeah, man, you're going to be okay. Give me that key, man. You know, everything's going to be good. And it isn't, you know, it's not, it's just not going to be good.
You know, the way he described himself, I really like this, in the interview that I watched, he said, I wanted to be Robin Williams' genie from Aladdin from hell.
He nailed it, man. That was it.
And I was like, yeah, that is exactly what it was, you know. And there was, you know, it's weird because he is overplaying this character, but it works so well, you know.
Yeah, it does. It was perfect. It's like Billy Zane. I had heard that he thought it was one of his better performances, which
okay, yeah.
And I'm like, you know, he did. He there was a whole like arc to everything that he did in it, but mm-hmm. to have those killer chiseled looks and to be, you know, go, yeah, let's go bald and give me the cowboy hat. And he rocked everything that they gave him and put him in, whatever. He's like, yeah, I own this. And he did. And it was great. And with the, you know, the ruggedness of, you know, of William Sadler and all, it was like, it was great. You know, he's got the leather jacket and shit. And the demon's got like, you know, he actually has like the opposite. You know, he's got the long white coat on. Got the cowboy hat. Looks like he's going to be the good guy coming in, and it was. I love the dichotomy and the dynamic,
mm-hmm.
and I can't imagine two other people in those roles. I think it wouldn't have worked. I thought it was great because they both had this grittiness to them and all, and they're going head to head, and but the one guy's good and the other guy definitely isn't. So it was like I just thought it was great the way they just brought it all together and just had like fun. Like they don't make movies like this anymore. They don't make characters are so fucking pigeonholed and designed in like these categories that we've created. It's just like, come on, man.
Well, and you know something, Bill, I'm glad you brought that up because I read that article you wrote for Crash Palace and it was beautiful, man.
Oh, thanks.
No, just about how horror embraces stereotypes too much and how, you know, there's much more to, you know, if you want to make good horror, you avoid the tropes, you avoid the stereotypes, you give us something we haven't seen before. And I think to what you wrote that this movie is kind of like a perfect example of that. You know, I was thinking of just going back to CCH Pounder getting her arm ripped off. I'm like, mm-hmm. oh man, she's a goner. And I was wondering if I was jumping to that conclusion. Is that because, oh, she's the black character and historically.
Right.
You know, the black character in a slasher film or whatever is usually one of the first to go, or at least they don't make it to the end. So I was like, I'd forgotten so much of this movie when I watched it. I was like, oh no, she can't die. It's too early. And so when, you know, when they stop the bleeding and she pounds that bottle of vodka, I'm like, yes, that is good. That is good right there. And she continues to fight up until the end. And that is, you know, mm-hmm. totally awesome. And there's no you go girl stuff. It's just like she does it because these characters are in a self-preservation situation and she just rises to the occasion. There's nothing, you know, there's
yep,
no like
exactly.
bright superimposed arrows saying, look at this, you know, it's just there because the writing is so good. And yeah. the same with Jada Pinkett Smith, you know, she's just, even from the start, the way she interacts with Irene is CCH Pounder's name in the movie, just the way they interact and go back and forth, they kind of trade these barbs because Jada Pinkett is, you know, she's a working for her, so she's turning down the rooms and stuff like that, but she has that sort of tank top on that suggests kind of this no-nonsense thing. And while I was watching this movie, I was thinking to myself, damn, 1995 was when Tank Girl came out, and I'm like thinking mm-hmm. Jada Pinkett Smith could have played Tank Girl just based on her attitude wow. in Demon Knight, you know.
Wow, man, that's I never thought of her playing that part.
Well, I was like, that would be how they would cast it today, but
yeah.
But no, I was just thinking,
Lori Petty, I love you. We should have gotten married.
No, I was like thinking she has that Lori Petty Tank Girl energy, and it really serves this film.
Can't argue that.
Yeah, serves this film well because Tank Girl was a character who didn't, you know, Tank Girl didn't take any shit, and she knew when to stand up and to when to fight and. Made no bones about it, and that's
no bones.
Yeah, same as Jada Pinkett Smith's character here. So, mm-hmm. yeah. So I was just kind of really taken aback. And one more thing, Bill, because you were talking about William Sadler's leather jacket and Billy Zane's coat and hat.
Yeah.
Another thing I thought was interesting, how Thomas Hayden Church mm-hmm. is wearing this kind of obnoxious... he's a douchebag, true to his name. He doesn't really do anything good throughout the movie.
No.
You know, he treats his prostitute slash girlfriend, played by Brenda Bakke, very badly. And but he's wearing like this Hawaiian shirt, and I was like thinking to myself, was that like a deliberate nod to Ace Ventura the previous year? Because he was kind of a douchebag too. You know, he was certainly this, you know, I mean, I watched the hell out of Ace Ventura when I was a teenager, but, you know, the reality of things is he was a pretty obnoxious character too.
Yeah.
But I was like, huh, is that just a little subtle nod to Jim Carrey or something like that? You know,
no idea. I never thought of that.
No, that was just something that came up thinking about the wardrobe choices, actually. So that's, you know, it's good when a movie can make you think about what a character is wearing and what that has to, and how that complements the character.
Or contrasts with them, you know, I love it.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's a sign of a good movie, where they were putting real thought into those tiny details. 'Cause William Sadler's all rugged and sort of weathered as a character in that mm-hmm. leather jacket, kind of,
which is perfect. Yeah.
Yeah, it looks like an old beaten up thing he's been wearing for years, which is probably what he has been doing. So I think that really spoke to his character's kind of exhaustion and tired of hunting demons and trying to save the world from all, you know, all this time. Yeah.
Yeah, he's like a guy at the end of the trail, and you know, it's funny because they say whenever you start a story, whenever you start a screenplay, you want to start as close to the end as possible. And it's like you could see him when he's coming on, it's like, oh man, this is like it's the end, and it's great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's perfect. It's such a blast. I gotta see it. I gotta get the Blu-ray now.
Yeah, I would say if you're a fan of the movie, definitely pick up the Scream Factory Blu-ray. It's a featurette that's like 40 minutes long, but they interview probably close to 20 people, so you really get a lot of
nice
production detail. I was really kind of surprised when I learned it was a spec script that they turned into a Tales from the Crypt movie. So
yeah, it was going around apparently for a while, and someone was like, hey, it isn't one of William Gaines' stories, but it fits in, let's do it. And I'm glad they did.
Well, and here's one last question for you, Bill, because they were talking about this. The Tales from the Crypt TV show was often predicated on like a moral lesson being learned,
right.
sort of like the Twilight Zone, like the early Twilight Zone episodes, where it's kind of like, oh, there's a moral to the story in the end. And they were talking about how this one didn't really have that. Like, what do you think of that? And did you think that detracted from anything? Did you notice?
Nah, it was just, I thought actually they did point out some things where you might find good in the most unlikely places,
mm-hmm.
and the same with bad, and it's just like, you know, when shit hits the fan, you'll find out who you could count on and who you can't.
Well, and I think there's also, yeah, absolutely, that's a very good, yeah. And I think there's also the thing about... sort of passing a passing of a torch, kind of a responsibility onto somebody else when the time comes, and sort of making that character judgment. You know, it's like,
yep,
you know, I've stood alongside you through this long night, and I see that, yeah, you can do what it takes. You know, but in the same way, there's a little bit of a twist in that it's kind of a curse that goes along with it too.
Mm-hmm.
But I kind of like that aspect of it. So yeah, definitely.
Awesome. Yeah, people see it and give it the recognition it deserves.
Yeah, and if anybody wants to share their love or thoughts on the TV show or the comics or this movie, just, you know, feel free to tweet at us on Twitter or talk to us on Facebook. We'd love to hear about it.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Wow, man. And I guess on that note, we're going to go right into the scream outs.
Absolutely.
And the first one is, we're going Hollywood, man. We're going with Dave Vescio. V-E-S-C-I-O, as he says, and you could find him on Twitter. Did I say Twitter? Twitter.
What is Twitter, Bill?
As he says, as Dave says, I went from ex-con to controversial icon. Starred in Hick with Eddie Redmayne and Chloe Grace Moretz. And he also starred in Paul McCarthy's Dada. And he's out of Hollywood, and you could find him on IMDb. Check out Dave Vescio. Cool guy, cool soul. Zach Galligan, he goes under ZWG Man. Gremlin Dude, Cats, Films, TV, Thunderstorms, and the Seahawks. And let's see, what else is he doing? He's out of Atlanta. He's out of Atlanta, too. He's on Instagram, so check him out. Conventions and appearances at Malfunk, F-U-N-C-S-E-A-N. Nicholas Swan, two N's, but that doesn't matter because he's actually SlickNick52 on Twitter. Amateur actor, home photo video journalist, narrator, photo contributor to TV stations. I love news, weather, and animals. The Showman. And he's out of Rochester, New York. The wonderful Sarah M. Why is she wonderful? Because she is actually Sarah with an H. Sarah Sweets 83. Queen of Horror. I'm the Devil's Daughter. She's got the horns to prove it, baby. Lover of horror and gore. Pagan witch and proud. And she's big, ultra big fan of Bleeding Critic. Number one fan, as she says. I don't think anyone would argue with her. Metal music fan. She loves Slipknot, Iron Maiden. And where is she? She's in your nightmares. And I'm taking a sip of water.
Well, I wanted to say, Bill, she's a really supportive person. Like, if you're having a
damn
down day, if you're having a down day, she'll come out and sort of reach out a hand to you, you know, to kind of try and help lift you up on social media. So I like that about her.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Next up, Ryan Caskey. Who is he on Twitter? The_spooky_king. Designer, illustrator, and king of the spook. Commissions are open. He's out of Columbus, Ohio. Check out his website, thespookyking.com. Flixology 101. Watch, drink, enjoy. Doing my best to save the world. One clip, one sip at a time. He has my vote for president already. Underappreciated, lousy screenwriter, and founder of Flixology101.com. And that's F-L-I-X. He's out of Frederick, Maryland. He's close to you, Johnny.
Oh, yeah.
Very cool stuff. Ruthless 74147. I am the Ruthless One. Gamer, a true fan of all things horror addict, horror movies, MMA, and brutality. So how's that? You want him to be a friend, that's for sure. The lovely, the wonderful Summer Juliet. Writer and pagan, loves animals, movies, music, and horror. All poetry is copyrighted by Quiet, Sarcastic, and Optimistic Realist. And she's out of Washington State. She is really, really a wonderful, wonderful soul. Admit One Film Ad, and that's ADD. What is that for? For Film Addict. I write a movie blog all about psychotronic cinema and everything else. I watch a lot of movies, but can't write a review to save my life. We all feel your pain, man.
Exactly.
Except for Johnny. You know how to write a review.
Oh, shucks.
And he's an Aquarius INTP, and you can check him out on admitonefilmaddict.wordpress.com. Ann W., another absolute sweetheart, great soul. The Cheshire Path. I got that out. INFJ, LGBTQ, IMGDC, Stay Lifted, Mental Health, Survivor Tough, and the content she posts is not her own unless stated otherwise. And follow her on Twitter because she's just amazing. Black Lives Matter as well. Grimm. Now, this is at _Grimm, two M's, and it looks like three underscores. just a slasher who occasionally reviews horror flicks, does LPs, and makes a mask. So check him out. Gore's Grimm. Oh, my God. Gore. My God. Grimm and Gore. Gore and Grimm. I need to eat. I'm passing out. Finally, Mary. Uproar in Houston. Metalhead from birth. How about that? SDMF, horror junkie, avid book reader, NHRA, that means she loves the drag stuff, floating around Houston somewhere. But Mary is cool as hell. So those are my scream outs, our scream outs for the night, Johnny.
Fabulous, Bill. And where can people find you?
They could find me right here at CrashPalaceProductions.com for links to this show and more. And you could get The Last Knock also on Spotify, iTunes, and I think 30 other places. I don't even know what they are. You could get my books, if you're so inclined, for erotic crime thriller fiction at Amazon. Just go to my Noir Kink Twitter and you'll find out how.
Excellent, man.
Johnny, you're up.
You can also find my writing at CrashPalaceProductions.com because Billy's a nice guy. And you can also find my writing at 1428elm.com.
Mm-hmm.
And Twitter and Letterboxd, you can find me at Johnny Num. There are no H's in those Johnnies.
Mm-mm, not at all. So watch Demon Knight, people. You won't be disappointed. It's a blast. It's a blast. It's a great ride.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes.
Great call bringing this up, Johnny. I'm glad you're like, hey, this is the show we're doing. 25 years. Damn, can't believe it. Incredible.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I can tell it's a 25-year-old movie. Hey Man, Nice Shot is the first song you hear on the soundtrack.
Now it's going to be stuck in my head all day long.
It's a good song to have stuck in your head, though.
Yeah, damn straight. Filter's this, best.
Yeah. So, okay, Billy, on that note, mm-hmm. I wish I would have met you, but now it's a little late. You need to go eat. So
that's okay. I have the keys, and they're safe and sound. Have a good one, man.
All right. See ya.
All right. Bye.